Right. I make it about quarter past. One of the things several things I'm convinced of, and one of them is that if you're looking at any kind of line of business application now, you should have a phone platform involved in your plans, and Windows Phone is a really great place to do that for the simple reason that it actually interworks with everything and you can reuse the code. Rob gave a very good talk this morning, Rob Tiffany, which if you weren't here, I'd advise you to seek out, because he basically built from the ground up a line of business app paying service to things like expandability, scalability, and portability, and he had the client stuff exactly the same code running on both a tablet and a Windows phone, basically you're moving into a situation now where you can think in terms of writing most of the core business behaviors once and then dropping them onto a variety of platforms, and Windows Phone is tremendously, greatly terrific for that. So it's a good choice for business, and that's what the slide says. And now I'm going to move on to Agent Secrets. My name is Rob Miles, www.robmiles.com. Is the blog where, hey, thank you. Some people, yes, remember to say woohoo and fill your names in for the draw afterwards, the important bit. I work at the University of Hull, which is a university in England on the East Coast, where I'm in charge of twisting young minds and crushing dreams. And in between, I teach C-sharp to the first years as well. If you want to learn C-sharp, then this isn't the best place to do it, but I do have a yellow book you can download for free, which has everything in there you might want to know. I'm also a Microsoft MVP and a Nokia phone champ, which is very pleasing. Nice about that. In terms of what we're going to do, talk about Windows Phone task management, multitasking with background agents, creating and managing and debugging tasks in Visual Studio, and what kind of tasks you've got. I have several convictions. That's not relevant. Old joke. I've got several things I'm convinced about. Better way of putting it. One of them is that you should have voice in your app. I mentioned that this morning. Second thing you should do is you should have some kind of background behaviors. Your users will expect your application to just get on with stuff in the background when they aren't using it. And so you should plan for this. And during the course of this session, what I really want to do is, apart from tell you some really funny jokes that I've written down over here, I want to give you the feeling that whatever you've built on phone, whatever you're planning with the phone platform, you give some thought to the background agent behavior. Because it's a wonderful way of adding a lot of very useful behaviors to your solution. And so we'll cover all this. And as I mentioned a little while as well, there is actually quite a nice bit of overlap between speechifying applications, which I mentioned this morning, and the way that background stuff works on the phone as well. And I mentioned that I hate using words like synergy, but it really is synergy. The two work very well together. So that's what we're going to do, how it all works, and loads of code. And the code will all be given away on the blog, so you can download it for free, and it's a good starting point for anything you might want to make. One or two gotchas I'll mention on the way, which I've come across as I was preparing the talk and playing with applications that do that. But before we go any further, just a quick quiz. How many Windows Phone developers do we have in the room? Oh, that's great. That's really nice. And the rest of you, I hope, are thinking about it and planning it and moving in that direction, which is rather nice as well. So, background agents. If you've used Windows Phone to any, it works better out of the case, I discovered this. You can see the screen a lot easier. Okay, right, please yourselves, tough audience, I don't mind. The phone has one application on the screen at any time. It was designed on the basis that the user is king, and the Windows Phone team were extremely nervous about providing background behavior of any kind, because they'd done things like got an Android phone, put Facebook on it, and found that after an hour the battery was flat because the Facebook app in the background was keeping things updated that no one could see, and thereby killed the battery and used up loads of data. And they were very concerned. They wanted a performant user interface which would run on fairly low spec devices and give a good experience. And the very first iteration of phone had no background processing at all. The foreground process runs and that's it. Anybody else is either in memory and can be switched to fairly quickly or is effectively not there at all. At any given time, one app's in the foreground and we want to make it that way. So if you're thinking, ooh, a background task is just my task running in the background, then that's wrong. And it's wrong for extremely sound technical reasons, which is that we have a limited capacity device, not much power in terms of battery life, not much bandwidth in terms of network connectivity, and a desire to give a really good experience to the users of the phone. Now, I think Windows Phone succeeds brilliantly on all these. It doesn't stutter. My son's got an iPhone, and I've left him in the will because I'm feeling generous. He's still got time to learn. And then we're driving along in his car listening to music, and the music stuttered. And I said, why did your music just go, bep, 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 bep? Oh, he said, that's just the iPhone fetching some mail. And I thought, really? That's not good. Never, ever heard the Windows Phone do that. They're determined to make sure that the user experience on the front end is as good as you can make it. And that compromises what you can do with background tasks. But it doesn't rule much out. And that's the takeaway I want you to have from this. Effectively, what happens is that your phone application starts a background agent that works on its behalf. And there are effectively two flavors of this. And it's a completely separate program from the main application. It's not the same as you saying, now I want my app to run in background mode. You build a separate project, you add it to the solution, it has a method which is called when the agent is invoked, and then it runs until it finishes, at which point it's done the thing it was designed to do. It could run at the same time as the foreground app, and I'll mention that and show you that in a second or two, but the bottom line list, the most important point on this slide is, it's not equivalent to a foreground application running in the background. It really is not. There are two flavors, which we'll come into in a minute or two, as periodic tasks or resource-intensive tasks. These have been tailored to be able to run on the phone and have the minimum impact on the user's experience. So we can't steal the entire processor. We can't tie the whole thing up and make the front end stutter. We just won't. The system will not let us do that. There are checks and balances in place. I mean, we just can't do that. Background agent, kind of a fun thing to do. There's a really another strong health warning here, which is that the system limits the number of background agents that can run at any given time. It depends on how much RAM there is in the phone, how much battery power we've got left, and a few other bits and pieces as well. If the right conditions don't arise for your agent to run, it won't get run because the system will be making sure the user gets a good experience. Background agents only run in situations where the OS says, I've got some slack now, I can let this guy have a go for a while. If the phone goes into power saver mode, all background agents might get killed off completely, and the user can go onto their phone and disable selectively background agents from different applications. So the bottom line here is that a background agent should not provide fundamental behaviors. It's a great way to provide really useful icing, but it can't be cake. If you have a fundamental behavior in your app, you should not put that in a background agent because it's perfectly possible that the situation could arise where the user will kill it or it will get killed. So things like checking if it's come into stock, looking for new items that may be available to sell on. These kind of things that add behavior to your existing app, that's where background agents fit in. So don't think that you can actually put the fundamentals into the background, because if you do that, there's a chance your app might not get those application behaviors to go because the user may have just taken against your app and killed it from a background point of view. So keep that in mind. They're still very useful, and you should still have one, but don't put your fundamental behaviors on there. Look for places you can invent bits of icing and put them instead, because that's what the background agent is all about. It's all about adding behaviors, making it even nicer than the experience they had before. In terms of names, you basically have a task, which is the thing you actually create. You request one of these to run your agent for you, and there are two flavors of task. I've mentioned these already. Periodic tasks get run every now and then. So at regular intervals, the phone will work through the list of tasks and give them a bit of CPU to do something fairly small. Now, by fairly small, I think things like go online and see if it's come into stock yet, update position tracking kind of stuff, things that you want to do on a day-to-day basis, go onto the weather ticker and bring down the new weather information or the stock market prices or whatever. These things run at regular intervals, and that's what they're for. Resource-intensive ones They get run when the phone's in a position to run something serious. I've got some slides on this in a minute or two, but basically database compaction, downloading new tables, new information from the internet, updating yourself, bringing down new podcasts, that kind of stuff. That's what your resource intensive is all about. The agent is the actual code that you write, and it lives in a class that derives from background agent, and you get a template. When you make a brand new agent project, you get a template class you just fill the code into, and that's how it all works. Quick word about periodic tasks. Here's the ground rules. We get 25 seconds worth of runtime. We can't have more than 11 megabytes of memory. If you crash twice in a row, if you throw an exception which you don't handle, then you will get killed. So you better make this code fairly watertight. If it won't work without a network connection and blows up if it can't find one, it runs out of memory if it behaves in a silly way, the second time it does that, it will get taken off the list and the user will have to restart it. An agent will be active for 2 weeks. So if they start your app, and then that's a two-week time window now in front of there. So 2 weeks after they ran your app, the agent will keep ticking. After 2 weeks, the system makes a decision that, well, they can't be that interested in your application, so it'll kill the agent that actually drives it. The one proviso on that is that background apps can update live tiles. That's how you get your weather information to update on your phone. And if you do that, that gives 2 more weeks. So if you have a live tile on the screen from your application, which the background app is working on, then you can keep your app in memory longer. And these things are great for polling background services, live tile updates, location tracking, that kind of thing, because they run at regular intervals around every half an hour or so, depending on the phone's loading. So every half an hour or so, the agent gets to run, fetches its stuff, does whatever it does, and then after a few seconds, it's thrown away. It dies, that's it. These guys, resource intensive, they're specifically designed for doing proper work. So you can have up to 10 minutes now, but these only get to run when you're on a power source and you've got more than 90% in the battery and you have a Wi-Fi connection for the network. So, oh, and the user's not doing anything. So if you, for example, I put my phone on the stand overnight and I leave it there charging, and while it's charging, I'm not using it, the lock screen's up, and so at this point, my resource-intensive tasks go down and fetch podcasts and update my news feeds and all that stuff, and I go in the morning, get a whole brand new set of stuff. That's how these things work. So you could do garbage collection, you could download updates, you can do all kinds of bits and pieces. The podcast one's quite a nice idea because you could bring down some nice big MP3 files and put them in ISO store, and then the user can get a live tile update that says we've got some new podcasts for you, touch on here to bring them up, and then off you go from there. So there's all kinds of fun and games you can have with these, but the two behaviors are kind of siloed off. The phone team have thought about the two things that you're going to want to have on your phone and provided a way of delivering those behaviors without giving the user a bad experience, because that's right at the front of what they're worried about. You could make an application that does both, so your single agent code can detect when it's fired up the context in which it's running, so you can pull back. Am I running as a resource intensive, which is I'll bring down some more stuff, or am I running as a periodic, in which case I'll just update the tile, and so on and so on. And the agent can basically look after itself and behave accordingly. So it's not particularly hard to do that. There are one or two things you aren't allowed to do, though. In terms of what you can do, you can change tile contents, you can pop up toast, you can read the location, you can use the network, you can use ISO store, you can use sockets, all the low levels if you'd expect. You can't drive the UI. You can't put messages up over and above tiles and toes, which we'll in a minute. You can't use the microphone. You can't use the camera or the sensors, and you can't play audio. This is, if you think about it, it's all very, very sensible. It's the stuff that you wouldn't really want to do because the user's running one particular application. They're sat doing that. And anything which pops up from other things is going to be very confusing for them. So all this stuff is kind of locked out. You can, the audio one, slight caveat, and I'll show you what later on when we play the everything sound, you can play audio from streamed media in the background using a task of your own, should you wish to do that. But everything else is kind of locked down, which is very sensible because these things run in the background. They don't do anything that should talk to the user. Here's my little program. It's called Location Log, and it basically tracks you. It's a periodic agent which runs every 20 seconds or so, and I'll basically show you, that's two basically one says, I'll show you how it works in the code and we'll go through the demo. The idea is that every now and then it updates the position in a file which just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you could bring that back and then do some tracking or draw a map or whatever you fancy. And it runs even when your application isn't in the foreground. And I have all the code here, and I'll give it all to you, which is kind of nice. You make it. I actually made this by firing up. If you look, this is the dialog for making a new project. And if you go down Windows Phone App, Pivot App, blah, 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 at the bottom you have Windows Phone Scheduled Task Agent. If you do that, add a new project to your solution, give it a name that kind of makes sense, and you're pretty much halfway there to making it work. You've now got two projects in your solution. You've got the location logger application, which has got the windows of the user interface, and you have the agent, which will run in the background and write to ISO store and store the positions in there. Okay, so we're going to make one big project, so which contains both these lumps of code, and then fire it off, and off we go. The only bit that you have to do, which is a little bit fiddly but not really, is that the foreground app, the actual application, has to have a reference to the output from the task agent project. Just drop that in. There it is. And so now that's the link between the two projects. Put that in as an add reference. And then at that point, we're now in a position where we can actually create agents and debug them in the phone on the fly. And in a second, that's what I'll be doing. When your agent fires up, what happens is that we have an onInvoke method, which is given a task reference. And this then just does the stuff your agent's supposed to do, and then calls notify complete to say, hey, I finished. And at that point, the agent's removed from memory. This task parameter here is how you find out what kind of task you're running in, whether you're periodic or whether you're resource intensive. And so you do all the sensible stuff in there that you want to do inside your agent. If you want to, if you use Windows Phone, you'll know about ISO Store. It's a background storage which is effectively for your application and your application only, and both the foreground and the background app can talk to that. So the idea is that the agent could write stuff in there and the main program could pick that up, or vice versa. Either will work just fine. I wrote a little method called load from ISO store, which fetches a file and puts it in a string, and it returns bool if it true if it worked and false if it didn't. There's one little caveat here, which is the agent and the main program could both run at the same time, and they could both end up fighting over the same file. You don't want that. So what I have on here is I put a mutex on, which is a mutual exclusion little object, which I used to handle it. There it is. And I basically have await, and then the stuff that works in there, and then we release the key when we're finished. So in here, I do my file reading. This is standard multi-threaded fun and games, and it means that what's not going to happen now is I'm not going to have two applications fighting over the same file. One of them will be held up while the other one uses it. This is not particularly, it's not rocket science, it's because that's science involving rockets. I wanted a talk in Paris. And next door to my lecture room, the European Space Agency were doing a thing about escape capsules and stuff, and I was actually able to say, it's not rocket science, that's next door, which I thought was really funny, but the audience didn't, so we kind of moved on. But I have got over it ever since then. I've recovered mentally, which is always kind of good. If you want to use location tracking in your background apps, not a bad way to do it. If you want to do that, you have to tell the system I'm using the location capability. And that effectively means your application will now say when the user installs it, this app tracks your location, is that okay, yes, no? And if they say yes, then in you go. If you don't put that in, then you won't get the program into the market, which is unfortunate. And then this is my code, pretty much, to get the location. Again, nothing much to it. I make myself a geo-coordinate watcher, and then I start it running. And then I ask it for the location. And in this case, I just make it into a string, put a new line on the end, and that's my string location description. Interesting things to bear in mind about this. You don't get live location data quite, because using the GPS is kind of resource intensive. It's one of the things that flattens the battery. So the phone will cache the location every 15 minutes or so, and then your background agent gets that information from the cache. If you're looking for a piece of bad news, I guess a piece of bad news is that if I wanted to track somebody on a minute by minute by minute by minute by minute basis, the only way I can do that is by having my application running in the foreground or running behind the lock screen. Okay, if you only have a background app that tracks people's activity on a 5-minute interval, then you can't do it because this system gets fired up every 20 minutes or so, and it's not even guaranteed to do that. So if you want to have a fairly broad large-grained tracking, it's fine for that. Anything smaller, then you have to run the program in the foreground, I'm afraid. But in terms of getting it, it's easy. Ask it, get the position. Bottom bullet point's kind of interesting as well, though. The emulator on Windows Phone has a fantastic user interface, and it has a brilliant way you can move around a map, and the information coming back from your watcher will actually track you on that map. This is true for foreground apps, but not background ones. If you run an application on the emulator and it's using the background coordinate information, this is not cached in the same way, so you won't see it. So I put a little bit of code in mine that says we're on the emulator, though, so I won't try and show you the position. But that's, again, that's just a simulation thing. Storing it, well, what I do in my program is I take the position string I've just created, I lob it on the end of my log string with a timestamp string, that sounds better, and then we put it all in the ISO store. So this is how my application works, and the string can then get put onto the user's interface or whatever you want to do. And just to show I've got a happy ending, when I've got all this to tell the user what's going on, I'll actually make myself a toast notification, give it a title, put a message on, and then call show. So this code does that. These things are called toasts. They pop up. And this is the simplest form of toast you can actually make. There are more complex ones where you can configure it to take you to a page if the user touches this. Bear in mind two things. One is if the user doesn't see it, it goes away and is never seen again. So if the user isn't on the phone at the time you do this, it'll have no effect. Second thing, you won't see this if the application's in the foreground. So your background app will run, your agent will complete its code, it will call the show method, but if your application's in the foreground, it won't pop up. And I can show you all this going in a few moments, get the excitement up to fever pitch. This is effectively how you start it. The system maintains a list of scheduled actions for your application. And what this code does is it says, okay, see if you can find a task called location logger. If you find it, then destroy it. If we're not allowed any background agents, then tell the customer we can't do them because the user's turned it off. If we find it, then what I tend to do is remove it and make a new one. So this bit of code here takes the actual name of the agent, calls remove agent, and gets rid of it, and then make a new one, and then we launch it. This is the code that actually starts the agent running. I'll show it in a second or two. And worthy of mention at the bottom, debugging's a pain if it only runs every 20 minutes. You don't really want that. You want the thing to fire much more frequently than that. So this bit of code here fires if we're running in debug mode, and it launches the agent and says run in 60 seconds. So it gets kind of annoying because you keep seeing that post pop up, but it does mean that the thing gets to run in a reasonable amount of time. Otherwise, you're waiting 20 minutes or so, and you aren't even sure then it'll get to run. So that's all the stuff, and that's the full chapter and verse about how... I'm itching to show you the code, because... Oh, wake up. That's it. That's good. Wonderful. So let's have a look. Press the magic button. And so here we are. This is my location logger program. We've got two projects in one solution. And if you look in here, you can find that there's where I actually brought the reference across from the agent into my main program. Now, what I want to show you first is the piece of code that actually makes it. So if I run my program up and deploy it to the emulator, and this is my logger, and it has a little start tracking, So if we put a breakpoint in here, and I hit the button in my program, then I'm going to actually search through for any active agents. There aren't any. There you go. So we're going to get rid of it, and then we're going to make a new one, and then off it goes. So at this point, we now have a background. I'm going to do the debug thing, and I can leave this thing running on. And what I could do now is talk or play the banjo for a few minutes. Well, 1 minute, actually. So I'll tell you a joke instead while it does its thing. This guy goes for a job in the zoo, and the manager says, oh, okay, we've got you a job. You have a job cleaning out the elephants. So this guy is in the elephants, cleaning away. And then there's this big fuss, and the boss comes along and says, well, this had this terrible problem. He said, we've got this very, very famous Guy the Gorilla. He's been our big exhibition. Lots of people come and see Guy. They all love Guy. He's just dropped dead. So what I'd like you to do is, there's the gorilla suit. Put that on, get in the cage, make like Guy the Gorilla, and we can all stay in business. And the chap thinks, oh, it's a little bit deceitful, but I need a job. I've got to pay the mortgage. So the guy puts on the gorilla suit, and he's in the cage being Guy the Gorilla, doing all this and going around, and he's bouncing off all the cage, giving the audience what they want, doing all the woo and all this. And then he just goes to one in the cage and goes bang, and the cage door falls flat, bang. And this cage is right next door to the lion's cage. So now this guy's in the cage with the lions, and the lions are walking towards him, and the chap's got these lions there, and they're coming towards him, and he starts going, oh, help, help. And one of the lions says, be quiet, you're both fired. Yes, right, fine. In the time it took to tell that joke, which I should have timed really, but I didn't, we've actually got a breakpoint fired in our agent, because we've had an on-invoke method kicked off because more than a minute has gone by. We've got our agent code now running. Now, the important thing I want you to take away from this, which is very important and a thing, is that I'm debugging the code in the agent. I'm not debugging the code in my main program, and we just hit it like that. The main application is still in the foreground. So if I look on here, my app is still up there. Location log is still in the foreground, but my background agent is running at the same time. It'll run through if I hit the run. It'll go through, but it won't pop a toast notification up because you don't see those if the app's in the foreground. If I want to see those, then I'll clear that breakpoint off, and I'll go back into here, and I'll do something else. Inside the emitter, I will back out of the application. Okay. Now, if you think about what I've just done, I've just killed the app. But if you look in Visual Studio, you'll find that according to Studio, we're still running. That's because we've still got a connection to the emulator. And if I leave this thing back up here, if I put my breakpoint back in, I won't do that because, I kind of make it sense. But I'm debugging the agent while the emulator is still running, but my app isn't the foreground app. So anything which happens in the agent will happen, and in a minute or two you should see that the toast should pop up saying location loaded. There you go. It's almost like I've rehearsed it for hours. And if I touch on there, then it'll take me through into my app. And if we go there, we can see that we've actually got a location report now, and it's saying, yeah, logs out on launch, that's the first one, and then we've got in the emitter. That time is kind of wrong because this is in the UK, so I'm out by an hour, but I can live with that. But can you see that you can debug the code inside Studio, even though it's a background agent? We're getting the same debugging experience. So we can just keep on chugging away, and the code itself is running. I've put a breakpoint there. It should fire in a minute or so. So you can actually see we can debug the code in just the same way in Studio, even though our app is not in the foreground. It all just comes together and works. So that's pretty much all I wanted to show you, really. If we hit the button, it fires the task off on invoke. ISO storage file load. Hey, it's gone again because it's fired again. Let that run and the message will pop up. Oh, no, it won't. Why won't it pop up? Thank you. Shall I give you a rocket for that? I think I'll give you a rocket for that. Is everyone okay with that? Thank you. You've won a rocket, and I've learned something from Rob. Give the man a round of applause.
Thank you.
It's okay. Right, so we've got all kinds of fun and games we can have here. It's the agents really come into their own when you get a tile on the Windows Phone start screen, because you can update those on the fly inside your agent as well. So you can alert users that way as well, which is kind of useful. But from point of view of location log, that's pretty much where I want it to be. So I'll press this button and we'll move on. What we just seen, we fired off an app that ran in the background, and it will keep on running. In fact, yes, I've just hit the breakpoint again. So I'll clear that off on my machine. You can't see that. Let it run on. It'll keep on going bing-bong at minute intervals till I get bored. No, actually, one thing I will show you, which is worthy of note. If I go into here, I can show you the bit that you need to be aware of with regard to the other users. If I just push that out of the way and then go down to settings there, and then we go applications, and I go background tasks, then location logger is allowed and it is running. If I hit advanced, we can see a bit more about them. But the thing which you need to bear in mind is that if the user wanted to, he could just go on there and go bang. And that means that now my location logging application has been killed. And if I say that, it means that it'll be killed until the user comes back. So now we won't have any more breakpoints, no more pinging, no more nothing, because I've killed it. Okay? Now, that means that if the user does that to your app, you lose your background abilities. Call it Kryptonite if you like. If you're Superman, it would be bad for you. And so it's possible that the user can, from that application interface, just clobber your background app and make it not work anymore. So bear that in mind. Okay? These things are great, but they aren't fundamental. So there you go. Debugging it, yep. If we use back or start, we can drop straight into the code because it's still running. It'll keep on running until I hit the stop button in Studio. And even then, the background agent will still run. But we won't have a debugger attached to it, so we won't see it going. Okay? And everything I've told you applies to resource-intensive as well. So you can make those work in a similar kind of way also. So background agents, renew often. My usual routine is that whenever the user starts my app... Yes, sir, you have a question? Yes. If you hit the break, the question is, if you hit the breakpoint and wait too long, will it be cancelled? You mean, will the program run on anyway, or will the background agent be killed? If you're debugging, then basically all bets are off. If you're debugging, it tends to behave in a sensible way. It'll queue the things up, but it won't really care. In real life, it'll just run through. If your background agent blows up, if it throws an exception which the system doesn't handle, then it will die. The system will note that. And if you do it twice in a row, and you're out. But the debugging behavior has been subtly tweaked to make it usable. It doesn't break the system by having a breakpoint and it sits out for a long period. You won't get any more traffic on that agent. It won't get called again until that one's cleared, because it has to call the tidy up method at the end before it can fire again. I mean, you're allowed a limited number of seconds. If you try and overstay your welcome, you will get killed. So if you put the thing into a tight loop and it gets stuck, then the system will come in after your number of seconds or number of minutes and blow you away. If you do that twice, you don't get it run again. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay, so, yeah. Renew often. I renew every time the program runs. Don't put critical behavior in. If you really want to have things that push information down onto the phone at regular intervals, less than 20 minutes or so, then you're going to have to look at push notifications, I'm afraid. And they allow an external server to push information onto the phone at any time, asynchronous. But you have to have that external server, of course, which is kind of a pain. So that's background agents and how to make them. So that's fine. That's all fine and dandy, and you can go nuts. But there are some other agents which you might want to know a bit more about, and here we go. First of these is file transfer tasks. These are background tasks, but they're not quite the same. If you just have a need to bring some files back, then You don't have to do that yourself. You can get the file transfer task to do it for you. Now, the thing here is, of course, you can start doing mix and match now, because your periodic task could fire up, find there's a new file, and then fire off a file transfer task to get it. So just because you can't fetch the file yourself doesn't mean you can't get the system to do it for you. So these tasks are specifically for fetching stuff from HTTP or HTTPS hosts. At the moment, FTP isn't supported, which is kind of annoying, but it all just works. The system keeps a list of transfers that are active for this application, and it runs through them. It's the same technology as is used for the updates and for fetching map files and things down. It's exactly the same as that. And so these things go on in the background, even when the user isn't running your application. If you've got a need to transfer files, there are a few things you need to know about in terms of transfer policies. You can't upload more than 5 meg on cellular. You can't download more than 20 meg on cellular. So we don't want to really upset the users by bringing down a stonking great big file and blowing away their entire monthly allocation. On Wi-Fi, on battery, you can't upload more than 20 meg, and you can't download more than 100. There is a transfer preferences setting you can put on the transfer to override these if you want, but be extremely careful about this, because nothing would upset the user more than having your application flatten the battery and use up all the data they're allowed to have that month just to bring some stuff down they haven't really asked for. Now, the place you go to find out more about this is in the Get Connection profile. You get the connection cost value, which is this thing here. And then if C is roaming and over data limit or approaching data limit, then we could be heading for kind of expensive country. The one to look for is unrestricted, because that basically means go nuts, buddy. You can get what you like. We're at home, we're on Wi-Fi, we're all connected up. So at the very, very least, to actually do justice to your user, you should check where they presently are and actually give them the option, hey, you're on roaming. Are you sure you want to bring down this enormous blog file? I mean, it is ROBS, but that doesn't make it that wonderful. The bottom bullet point is also very interesting as well. Applications can bind to these events. So as long as you're the foreground app, if the situation changes and they walk out of their house and onto their bus or whatever and they lose the home Wi-Fi, you can have events that fire when that happens, so you can kill transfers and turn them off or put up confirmation dialogues or whatever you like. So keep an eye on this, because it's kind of important from the user experience point of view that we don't give them a bad experience by killing their data contract on behalf of them. In terms of where you bring it in, there's your namespace, background transfer. You bring that in, and it's a lot easier than background tasks, because you just make one of these things and fire it off. So here we have my transfer file name in the string, and then we basically make a URI out of it, and then having done that, we make the request, put the get and post methods on there to send it one way or t'other, and then give it a file name, which is effectively where you're going to put it. And it's interesting that it should be in the shared slash transfers directory to put this thing in. It's going to live in there. There's the file name. There's the URI to put it into. And then, yeah, allow cellular and battery means let's go for this one. Let's really, if it's a fairly small file, we don't really care. Or the user said it's okay. And then we just fire it off. And at that point, we have an application which is now transferring data in the background. What we can do is we can query our list of transfers to find out how it's doing, and we can also bind to events that fire as the file is brought down. So if the user's watching, we can do progress bars in our application. If the user isn't watching, we can just it'll come down all by itself, and then come back to my app and see how it went a little bit later on. So these are the event handlers that you bind to it. Transfer status changed and progress changed. And so the bottom one you'd use for your progress bar to make it move up. The top one, progress bar, sorry, bottom one is when it's finished. So you just bind to these, and I've got some code I will show you in a second that does all this. This is all my program does. It effectively puts a bytes received message on the display. The status one, a little bit more complicated, because the magic numbers 200 and 206 appear in the conversation. No idea where they came from. You win a really big rocket if anyone happened to know, but I haven't got a really big rocket, so it's kind of a bit academic, really. But if you get those two, happy endings. We've got the program, we can use it. If we haven't got the endings, then we can resubmit or do something sensible or put a message up or whatever. There is a very important point to make at the very end, which is that the transfer requests aren't removed automatically. They'll sit lying around in their completed state until you kill them. And so there's a remove method where you give it the request, and that will take it out of the queue. Okay, so once you've got the file, the nice thing to do next is to kill off the transfer completely. If it can't find the thing to remove, it will throw an exception. So I've done the thing which I tell my... If any students do that kind of thing, I actually get very cross with them because I hate things that just catch and do nothing. At very least, you should rethrow that or do something sensible, I reckon. That's just me. I'll leave it between you and your conscience at this point. I don't particularly like that, but it shows you what's going on, which is the important thing. So let's fetch some pictures. Let's go get some pictures. Press that button. Now, true story. You may find this surprising, you may not. But before I do these presentations, I actually test all my demos. So I was sat downstairs in the speaker lounge testing all my demos, as you do. Location logger seems to have got stuck. That's good. Anyhow, I'm testing my demo and it won't fetch the picture. This is bad because I'm showing you how to fetch pictures and it won't fetch it. So, small amount of consternation in the ranks. I spend ages... I'm going to kill that Visual Studio project because it's annoying me. What it is? Oh, it's gone. That's good. Thank you. Anyway, I couldn't download my picture. It was going really badly. And so, spent about 10 minutes putting in debug code. And in the end, I found my blog was broken because it fetches the picture from my blog and my blog was bust. What are the chances? Mucho de panicking. And so if you look now, the URL for the picture is no longer robmiles.com, which is my world-famous blog, but now it's a reference on Flickr. And so this one should work. But you know how it is when occasionally the universe conspires to, let's kick Rob in the nuts and do just that. That was this morning. You were under pressure. You were a long way from home. You're worried enough about the fact that you're in a different domain, and they always get tetchy about that. And then it did that to me, so great. Thanks, universe. Lovely. What I have discovered, though, after extensive tests, is that the universe is not actually out to get you. Actually, it just doesn't care. And that's probably worse. But anyway, let's not get too carried away. Hit the fetch button. And wow, that was quick. That's a picture from Flickr. Flickr is faster than my blog. You didn't actually see that go. If we'd seen any progress bars, they would have come up here. You can type any file name you like on there. And that's a picture I took last night. It's on Flickr. The code itself is everything I've shown you. So if we go and have a look in Start Fetch, if I can get that code up, there's a good lad. Come on. Oh, stop the program. Let me take a look. So if I go down here, come on. Oh, wrong one. Life not going. Yes, it. All right, I'll open the dreaded source file and look myself. I don't care. Right, okay, so. That's my thing which displays the image and just puts it on the screen from ISO Store. This is my fetch file button. Click, get the file name, get the URI from the file name text that I typed in, build the transfer request. It's going to be a get. We're going to go and put it in the transfers directory. There it goes. Set the options and then add it, fire it off. And then just on the way out, I add a couple of event handlers, one for progress change for the progress bar, and one for status changed. And so if I just drill down here, status change is the interesting one. If it's completed, and I've got it, I say completed, then I display my image. And that goes into ISO Store and fetches it. Otherwise, I'll put an error code up, and then I'll kill the transfer and remove it from the thing. And that's it. Nothing more to it. I do rather dodgy things like turn the button off when you press it, then re-enable it when it comes, which from a UI point of view, not mad keen on that, but I could maintain a queue of transfers and do all kinds of funky stuff, but frankly, I can't be bothered. Progress change just updates the text, and let's do it again. It was kind of fun. I think I may have clobbered the file name. Oh no, we've got start fetch. Bang. You just saw the transfer thing pop up and then complete it came and off it went. And so, yes, basically Flickr's faster than my blog, which is kind of worth knowing, I guess. That's it, quite simple. Not worth a round of applause, obviously. So we'll go back. Yeah. Ha. It worked this morning too, and those that were here this morning aren't clapping now. That's interesting. Yes, yeah, I'm not surprised. Maybe. So yeah, you can find out how many transfers you've got running, and you can perform management on the fly. There's an even better example than mine, I guess, on MSDN. One of the things worth looking at, if you've been looking at this in the past and not found the MSDN stuff to be that comprehensive, towards the end of May, they put a whole slew of new examples on MSDN about file transfer, background agents, speech, and all kinds of good stuff. So do go back there, because they keep adding stuff all the time, and it's really, there's some good stuff there now, which is kind of nice. So there you go. This is how you find out what transfers you've got, and then you can work through and do what you like with those. And now we're going to move on to alarms and reminders, which is all good stuff. The Windows Phone OS manages alarms that you've got lying around and actually looks after them for you. So you can fire these things off and the system will look after them until the alarm fires, and then perhaps even beyond that, or until the phone is turned off, one of the two. So you can build a reminder, you can link it through to a notification on a particular page and just fire it off and then away you go. I mentioned this morning, and it was, the reception was just amazing. There were people dancing and singing and hats flying in the air and streamers, and someone went, oh yeah, so this is the cheese reminder program that reminds you to eat cheese, okay? And the idea is that in case you forget to eat some cheese, you can say cheese reminder 5 minutes and an alarm will go off to say please eat some cheese. Now I covered it this morning in the context of voice control, because the app I'm showing you is actually voice powered, so I don't set the alarm by hand. That's kind of boring. I just say cheese reminder 2 minutes and I'll get my reminder in 2 minutes set on the back of a voice command. It's actually very easy to do that. You can actually find the code in the thing. I'll show you a little bit about it in a minute or two, but there's also, you can dig out my lecture from this morning and watch that through and pull down the demos. And so the idea is we're going to actually make a little reminder, and to do that, very, very easy. Bring in the scheduler, which is the namespace for that. Make a new reminder called Cheese Reminder. The begin time is basically the date time now plus however many minutes in the future I want to go. This is a time span of so many minutes. And then I basically say that's the expiration time is the same time. You can make these things repeat. You can make it say go every week. Okay? Now that's okay, but you may want to have a time. Say it's like lectures for a semester, which my students would find useful. You can make it do every week at 9:15 on Monday until the 1st of December, which point it stops. Okay? So you don't just have to be setting up one-offs. You can make quite complex behaviors here should you wish to do that. Mine is very simple. It's going to go in 5 minutes, say. We don't have a recurrence interval. This is the page I want to go to when the user hits the reminder. And then having done that, I lob it into the service and leave it to sort it out. And that's that. So I've now made a reminder which will fire at some point in the future, and it will just go. If I want to, I can search through my reminders that are active for this application. I can find mine, and I can remove it if it exists. That's a bit of housekeeping there. Remember, each app has its own list of reminders, so I can't fiddle with other people's reminders, but I can add as many of these as I think is reasonable. Once I've done that, away it goes. And this is more demos. I could say something really insane like, everything's working really well. No. Pardon? Yeah, there'd be a huge bang, and there'd be a big smoke. There'd be a pair of smoking boots where I was standing. I can hear the explosion now. So here we go, cheese reminder. This is the application. This is the code that sets a reminder, and you've seen this code. This is a little helper class I've made, which does it all for me. I give it the minutes and the reminder I want to set, and it does all the hard work. I could probably parameterize the target page as well, but didn't do that. If you look in the actual code from my program, then there's a page called set page, which is the one that's hit when they say set the reminder. And all that does is it pulls, these are my decodes from the spoken words to particular numbers, 35, 25, whatever. So I have a little thing which looks these numbers up in a list, which is the list there. And so my program gets a set reminder message from the user, pulls the number out, pulls the units out, computes the time, and then just fires it off. That's the thing that works out the delay value and fires it off. So if I run my program now, it'll go into the emulator. And, yeah, okay, well, I can back out of there, whatever I like, and go out like that. And the program, just like with background agents before, the program's still there. I can do things with it. So if I go in here and I go, yep, wobbly sound, accept that, that's okay. Cheese reminder, 1 minute.
Setting a reminder.
And that's it. So if you really do want to have a voice-controlled cheese reminding program, then it's there. I didn't even ask, that's great. If you don't want that, that's fine. But if you park your car or want to be reminded to ring Fred back in 5 minutes kind of stuff, then that tech is all here as well. If you want to look out the actual slide deck and what have you, you can preload the messages the thing will respond to when you speak on the fly in the program. So your background task could update a list of stock item names, which the user could then ask for, or it could tell the user, or that kind of thing. And in a minute or so, my reminder should fire. It's counting down even as we speak. And at that point, that will be when I'm really impressed. But there's nothing to this. The code is extremely simple. And so any kind of voice control reminder, you now know how to do it. Have I got time for another joke? Looks like I have. As a chap becomes convinced that his wife is having an affair with another man. Rather sad, actually. So one day he thinks, I'll try and catch her at it. So I'll come home from work at 2 o'clock, surprisingly early. So he comes home from work at 2 o'clock. And he runs into the house and sprints upstairs, and he finds his wife in bed in a transparent negligee, and he's looking around the, there you go, there's my reminder. So that's the end of that joke. No, I'll finish the joke off, why not? So he finds his wife in bed, and he thinks, somewhere in this house is the man who has been ravishing my wife without my permission. So he starts hunting around the house. He's going all around the house, and he can't find anybody anywhere. Checks all the cupboards, he checks the wardrobe, and he's just upstairs getting his breath back, looks out of the window, and he sees this really smug guy get into an open-top sports car. And he thinks, that's him. He looks smug. I'm going to do for him. So he looks around for the nearest convenient object and finds the fridge. And he picks it up, and he throws it out of the window onto this guy's head. There's this enormous bang, and then the guy finds that throwing fridges is not the kind of thing you're supposed to do at his age, and he promptly keels over with a fatal heart attack. Okay, so the scene now switches to St. Peter's Gate in heaven, and St. Peter's sat there, and the first guy turns up, and St. Peter says, what happened to you? And the guy says, I've been convinced my wife's been cheating on me. I found the man that was doing it, I threw a fridge at him, and then I got this pain in my chest, it all went black, and here I am. And St. Peter says, you'd better go inside, we'll sort it out later. Second guy turns up with his head all broken in, and St. Peter, what happened to you? Well, he says, I've absolutely no idea. I just got this brand new sports car that day, and I was taking it for its first test drive, and this fridge came out of the sky and killed me. And St. Peter said, you'd better go in as well. Third guy turns up, totally black and blue, covered in bruises, and St. Peter says, what on earth happened to you? And the guy says, well, I was sat in this fridge. Okay. I quite like it. There's the reminder which is fired. And so we can do one of two things. We can snooze for a while. Three things. We can dismiss it, we can snooze, or we can hit the application at the top, which will take us through to the shortcut, which is bound to the event firing. And it says cheese time. And it says, now eat some cheese. So the idea here is that what you can do in your application, and I mentioned this in passing this morning, here's the reminder fired page, which does all that. I mentioned this in passing this morning. It's perfectly possible for you to make your application or your game set a reminder that says things like, you haven't played our game in a while. Please come back and have a go. Or remind folk to run your application. Now, if you do that, I leave it to your conscience as to whether you actually hammer your users like this. They might get a bit fed up with it. But there is a way in which your program can drop a reminder in there, which the user can then use as a way to get back to your app later on. So if you do want to remind people that you do want me to set you, you could ask the user, do you want me to remind you in an hour or two to do blah? And if they say yes, you just fire this off and then leave it there. And the only thing I'm not too keen on is if you looked at the reminder very carefully, you would find there's nothing obvious about touching the top to take you to the app. But it does do that. The same happens in Toast as well. If you tap those, you go through the application from the Toast. So it's not crystal clear that the user can get to your app by doing that. But if they do, then that's the way. You could have like a fast response award. If they touch that thing within half an hour of it firing or whatever, they get an extra mark. I don't know. It's all a thought. But as far as you're concerned, the payload for that bit of the course really was I wanted to show you how easy it is to make an alarm fire off, and I think that bit worked quite well. So finally, last bit, you can do audio playback as well. And again, this is subtly different, third way of doing things. I can make an audio streaming agent or an audio playback agent. I'm going to show you the streaming one, but they both work in the same kind of way. And this runs, it's a separate application which runs as an agent, but is bound to the media playback in the phone. So what I can do with this one is that I can build playlists and I can stream information. Bad news, a background agent that you create to play audio can only play the audio from ISO Store, not from your phone's media collection. Now, I was kind of upset about this because I wanted to be able to do things like when they're playing a piece of music that if you skip past a particular track a lot, I wanted to not play me that track ever again. And I wanted to build a player which did this kind of thing in the background. It's not possible to do that, unfortunately. But what you do get is the ability to play back streams. So what I have on here is a thing called the Everything Sound, which is on my blog, and again, this hopefully the blog's still working. And so I make myself a little playlist of items. In this case, we've just got a couple, a local file and a streamed audio item. Local file has to be an ISO store. The example code I'll put up on the web shows how you can copy the file from the project resources into ISO. You need to do that. But for me, this is where your background agents and everything comes together. If you are doing a podcast type thing, your background agent on the interval timer could fire and check the XML, oh, we've got a new podcast, could then fire off a file transfer background task to get the file back in, and then we could use an agent like this to play it in the background for us as well. So we have a complete solution using various different kinds of background technology. So all you do is make this playlist, and then you effectively find your audio player and fire it off. You have to use the background audio namespace to bring it all in, and your agent will get messages from the phone music player to do track movement. So you respond to a bunch of events, which is a very posh. That's a very posh transition. I'm impressed with that one. The Everything Sound, okay? Now, the Everything Sound is basically everything in one sound. What happened here was I was doing some work with a program called, anyone here heard of Audacity? No? If you want to play with audio and twiddle with the frequencies and edit it and capture it and do stuff, Audacity is great for that. So if you want to make your own ringtones or add echo or mess around with sound, and it works in terms of tracks. So you have a row of tracks in there, okay? And I was playing around with this, and I pressed the button to export the tracks to make my sound, okay? What I'd forgotten was I had every single track selected. So I had about 25 of these, and they all played at once. And I made this sound, which is, well, once you've heard it, it changes your life. And it's just really strange, because I was playing around with building some sound effects for games and playing around with a synthesizer. And I'll just turn the volume up to 11. Oh, it's already there. Oh, good, oh, good, oh, good. Now, what we've got here is, if we look at the background agent, there's my Everything Sound embedded in the application. And so I've got the MP3 program the data file in there for me to play. And if you look in app.xaml, in the code for that, I have a little method, come on, show me, here you go, which copies to ISOstore. So this is you can use this for all kinds of things, but basically you give it a list of file names, and it will then work its way through and copy them all from your resources, in this case in the audio directory, there we are, into ISOstore, so I can play them. So that's a useful thing to have lying around, whatever. But that lives in app.xaml, and it does, when my program starts up, bottom here, I just say, OK, do the copying thing, and it copies it across for me. And if we go and have a look in my agent component, which is further down here, then where are we? Here we go. Then you can see my program. There's my playlist. I have two things. I have a local file version and a remote blog version, both of the same sound. And then I have some methods to navigate through the sound. And effectively, if the state of the play changes, I get this file and I deal with it. And if the user presses a button to change the state, play, stop, pause, fast forward, blah, I get that one fired. And so if I run this thing up in the emulator, then come on, there's a good lad, thank you. So these are my buttons that bind through to the thing. If I hit play, the everything sound. Amazing. It's for the ages. I haven't heard it, that's it. It could be your next ringtone. See, and I thought, yeah. Okay, now he's doing it online. So both my blog is working and my local copy is working as well, which is nice. And if I hit pause, it calls the pause method through, which then passes it onto the play thing, and away it goes. So if you want to do anything like playing background audio, you could leave your blog on the server and just pull it down and play it through a stream on your background, or you could bring the file down and then play it as a file. Either will work. Like I said, the bad news for me, the bit I don't like, is the fact that you can't play your own media. You can't play stuff in the media player. And then again, you've got a perfectly good program for doing that, so maybe Microsoft said, just don't know why you want to do that, so we shan't. So, in terms of where we are, you can make your own background processes, and there's a couple of flavors of tasks you can use to add to your application. Periodic tasks and resource intensive. These things will run, but you can't control when. So as far as you're concerned, it's icing we're writing, not cake. ISOstore is the place where we communicate. So we put files in there so that the two foreground and background can talk. You have to deal with the fact that they can run at exactly the same time. We can debug them in both foreground and background. And once you've done that bit, then you move on to the what I would call special purpose guys that do file transfer and that will do the music streaming and also set alarms for you. So if you've got an idea for an app that's working on the phone, I'm kind of really hoping that you'll walk away from this going, oh, I could put some background behavior in that would be kind of useful. And I could add value by doing that. So please do take that away, because that's kind of where I'm going with this. So, at this point, any questions? Two questions, all right. It's Windows 8. Oh, yes. No. This is a Windows phone. This is a Windows phone only. I was hoping that this morning that no one was going to say, does all this lovely speech stuff work on Windows 8? And my answer would be, I'm afraid not. No, this stuff is all, this is how the phone does it. This has been designed and tweaked specifically to make it work on the phone. So you'll see things like async and what have you in some of the behaviors, which make you think it might be Windows 8-ish, but it isn't. It's all Windows Phone only, I'm afraid. If you power off the phone, you will lose your background tasks. I can double check that. I had a bit of fun and games with this, but as far as I can recall, powering the phone down will actually cause them, because it's your app that fires them off and gives them the context. So you would lose them at that point, yes. And, yep?
What if your iPhone calls are running and then you get the phone call? What would happen actually with your application? Does it suspend it?
if a background task is running and you get a phone call, then I would suspect the background task will keep running. The one that will get killed is if you're doing a resource intensive and the user picks the phone up and opens the lock screen, at that point you'll get that'll be the end of that one, I'm afraid. You can bind to events that will fire when you're about to get flipped out, just as you can for tombstoning. So the question was, if a phone call comes in, what happens to background tasks? And the answer is, resource-intensive ones will get clobbered at the point they're not allowed to be resource-intensive anymore. Have you all filled your names in? I mean, the big excitement's gone already because I've given the rocket away. I do apologize for that. We still have a phone to give away, and it's not mine, which is even better. That's good. I like that. There's these two parrots on a perch, and one says, "Can you smell fish?" Or not. You have to think about that one. Has everyone put their name into the hat? To the non-hat? To the anti-hat? This is the exciting bit. Yes, I should have something light and witty to say. But, how does an elephant ask for some nuts? Yeah. He goes, "Can I have some nuts, please?" No? That's my friend Simon's favourite joke, which just goes to show the kind of people I hang around with. And him, for that matter. Okay. Are we all filled in? Shameless humour. That's all the way. Yeah. The only other one I've got is that scientists have just found a new subatomic particle that exists only in outside toilets. It's called the latrino. Which I really like. These are all my own jokes, by the way. I didn't get them from anybody else. Nobody else would admit to them. So have we got, that's quite good. Last time I was saying, no one's written Rob Miles just to cause me embarrassment, have they? No one would do that. So, is it shuffled? Okay. I shall pick one at random, and it will be Johan van der Voin. J-O-C-H-E-M van der Voorn. Sorry, B2K. I'm no good with reading. Is that Jochem? Jochem. Sorry, I apologize. Van der Voorn. So have we a winner? I'm sorry about that. I'm no good. This writing's too close to the paper. Oh, just that's you, absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Get them on your phone. Right,
okay,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Shake hands. Well done.
I can put a background task for it, so.
Oh, good man, yes. Tall people need more nice things to happen to them. That's my theory. Okay, well, thank you very much for being a great audience. And robmiles.com, remember. Okay, cheers. You want that.